I want to review why I've come, my mission, God's mission for me, through me. One is that we would experience Jesus in a fresh way. Psalm 34:8, oh, taste and see that the Lord is good. That is an invitation to experience God. I was thinking in my motel room this afternoon, I grew up in an era where people loved to do this. I don't know if you grew up in that same era, but do you know anybody that's ever reached out their hand for you to shake hands, and just as you were reaching, they went... And so you got your hand out there and you're feeling like an absolute fool. I got a word for you. God never does that. He never does. When he does this, he never does this. And leaves you out there looking like a fool. When God does this, he means this. He invites us to taste. And he will never do this. He's the one that said, oh, taste. And see that I'm good, I'm delicious. See for yourself, not your mother, not your grandmother, not your pastor. See for yourself that he's delicious. Mission statement number one, we're here to experience, to taste how delicious he is. Mission statement number two, as a result of experiencing him, we would exalt him more. We would value him more. Now, the ultimate goal of the Christian life is worship. To where we would worship him supremely. Now, I'm pretty realistic about a walk with God. And the truth is, most of you will not, as a result of this week, most of you, as a result of this week, will not worship him supremely. But you'll make some baby steps toward that. You'll gain some ground. The Christian life is a journey, it's a process, and if you think you're going to make that much ground in a week, I'm not real optimistic for you. I think worshiping God supremely, where when we can sing songs like that and mean it, nothing compares, nothing to the promise I have in you, that's a lifelong pursuit, ladies and gentlemen. For it to be authentic, we can make noise about it. But for a lot of us, we value other things more than we value God. That's just the truth of the matter. And God's passion for us is that there are thousands of baby steps in this journey to where we increasingly, authentically value him more and more and more. This would be a wonderful week if many of you made numbers of little baby steps. To where you could say by Wednesday night, I really do value him more because of my involvement this week and my obedience to his promptings than I did on Sunday morning. To experience Jesus, to exalt Jesus, to expand your vision, there's more. I want to expand your vision. I was thinking about this in the motel room this afternoon. Imagine if the only thing you knew about baseball was your backyard. You didn't have enough money for a backstop, so you used no lounge chair for a backstop. You didn't have money for bases, so you just had to locate the bases where the ball spots were, so your bases weren't very symmetric. I don't know what that word means, but it sounds good. And you didn't have enough money for a bat, so you just used a stick, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. One day a guy drives up in a big shiny automobile, and he says, hey, you guys like baseball? We love baseball! Well, check with your parents because I'm going to take you on a trip. For sake of an illustration, you check and they say yes, and he takes you to the World Series. And all you've ever known about baseball is ball spots and lounge chairs and sticks until you walk into the baseball arena and you watch World Series baseball. Baseball as it was designed to be at its very pinnacle. Well, I want to say to most of us, and this is not shaming, it's just true. Most of us, regardless of how deep we are, we're still playing baseball with ball spots and lounge chairs as it relates to knowing God, because there's so much of him to know. I want to enlarge your vision that pursuing God is a lifetime. No, it's an eternal journey. we will continue to discover how delicious he is for years upon years upon years. And out of that, I want to encourage you to more passionately seek him and pursue him. I want to enlarge your pursuit of him. That because he's so delicious, this week you could say, you know, Lord, I have been passionately pursuing you, but I want to step up to a new level. I want to diligently, daily, passionately pursue you. Not because I'm afraid somebody's going to ask me if I'm having a quiet time. It's not, I got to have a quiet time. It's, I get to have a quiet time. I get to. Because I'm pursuing you. I'm thirsty for you like a little deer is for the water brooks. It's a want to. It ain't a have to. And you know, people in the world, they don't know what to do with somebody like that. They understand all this law stuff. Well, I got to go to church. Well, they get that. They don't know what in the fat to do with someone that delights themselves in the Lord. They just go, I don't get it. I understand this duty thing. I don't get this delight thing. And of course, that's because they've known Christians who, as adolescents, said, well, you know, I'd like to sleep around. I'd like to get drunk, but I'm a Christian. And I can't. Translated, I can't do what I want to do. And you know, they do feel something about that. They feel like, well, poor thing. I'm so sorry you became a Christian. Sounds like a bummer to me. But I tell you, when they meet people who, when they're invited to get laid or get drunk, and they say, well, listen, thanks for inviting me to the party, but you know what? I am so full, I don't need to drink from that kind of muddy water fountain. I'm just so full, I don't need that. But listen, thanks for inviting me. But I'm so full, I don't need that. That is the kind of person they scratch their head with and go, hello. And that's the kind of generation God's raising up, of people who delight themselves in the Lord. Why? Because he's delicious. Well, that's why I've come. Well, Wednesday night, let's figure out if we got there. Let's evaluate. If we didn't get there, then we didn't get there. And if we did, we did. My theme this week is cut to the core, rediscovering and embracing the fundamentals. Going back to the practice field, Lou Holtz said when he had 4 weeks to prepare for their big game. The way to go deeper is always through the basics, not around them. Did you hear that? That was an audience participation question. Did you hear that? Okay. Quit looking at me like a deer caught in headlights. Work with me here. I love some of those churches where they say, do I have a witness? I don't want to have to use that. Work with me here. This morning we dealt with core issue number one, fundamental number one, practice field item number one, rediscovering and embracing the supremacy of God, that he is worthy of our worship. When we embrace and rediscover the supremacy of God, when this happens, we become true worshipers, which is what, at the basic core, we were designed to be. Tonight, I want to deal with core issue number two, fundamental number two, rediscovering and embracing not the supremacy of God, but the power of God, or a synonym would be the greatness of God. David Guyon and I, we fish together every May, which I won't go into. But David said something over a greasy hamburger when we were talking that impacted me. And he just made the comment. He said, you know, what God is doing in this time zone, in this season in which we live, he's raising up believers. And the primary job description of believers is they believe. Okay. What do they believe? They believe God is more valuable than anyone or anything in their lives, that He's supreme. They believe God is not only valuable, they believe He is all-powerful. He's greater than every challenge. He's bigger than any issue. And that's not just preacher talk where we have a Jesus pep rally. That gets into the marrow of our bones, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Rediscovering and embracing the greatness of God. And listen, this is cool, guys. Or I'm in the South now. Y'all. Y'all. So when you embrace the greatness of God, you not only become true worshipers, the supremacy of God, when you embrace and rediscover the greatness of God, listen, this is good. You become people of hope. People of hope. I want to talk about being a person of hope tonight, because that's the result of embracing and cherishing and experiencing the greatness of God. Let's pray just a minute before we get into some observations about this text and in some personal applications. God, thank you for giving us the Bible, that thousands of times throughout our lives that we can feed on the truth of your word and be nourished with your truth that sets us free. And Lord, as we look at your word and as your word looks at us, may our hearts be plowed up and tender and responsive, that the seed of the living word would go deep into the soil of our hearts, and down the road we would experience the fruit of the living word in our lives and in our lifestyles and in our relationships and in our journey. Lord, this week, you know the one prayer that I've asked you for, just the one prayer, is that you would hallow your name. You would cause your great name to be more hallowed than it was before I came. And I know that this is a church and these are a people that do respect and hallow your name. But I pray that they would even step up to a new level. Cause your name to be hallowed. That your name and your renown, that your name and your fame would be the desire of our souls. And I pray this prayer in that name, Jesus Christ. Amen. Well, I want to make some real simple observations. Observations that are not deep. Observations that any of you could make. This is probably, I was thinking, one of the most familiar passages in all of the Bible. That's got good news and bad news. Good news is we're familiar with it. Bad news is sometimes we can blow over it and miss some of the tremendous truth. There's a downside to familiarity. But I want you to look at this story, this true event that happened in history through new eyes tonight. And I want you to be nourished on the truth of the greatness of God. Some observations. Observation number one, Saul's men were terrified as they focused on Goliath. He was 9 feet, 9 inches tall. Verse 11 says they were dismayed, they were terrified. Verse 24 says they ran away in great fear. Now, the thing that's intriguing to me about this is this. These guys are not just any group of men. Folks, this is the army of God. They are paralyzed. They are immobilized. They are terrified. They are intimidated. They are shut down. They've lost their confidence. They are stuck. Observation number one. Observation number two, the fear was relentless. 40 days, 9 foot, 9 inches of flesh in the form of a giant came out twice a day, 40 days, and verbally assaulted the army of God. He intimidated, he defied, he blasphemed. It was relentless. I don't know if you felt times in your life where your faith just drained to your toes because you were overwhelmed with the giants. Observation number three. This is big. This is from the text. This relentless fear caused them to lose hope. If you would have walked in the army's camp that day when David arrived, you would have smelled something. You would have smelled something. It was the smell of despair. You ever smell that smell? I've walked into homes before and smelled it. I've talked with parents when their kids ran away and I smelled it. I've been in the counseling office with husbands and wives with a marriage that looked pretty much irreparable and I've smelled it. I've been to churches before and I've smelled it. I've looked at my own cesspool and I've smelled it. Smell of despair. You'd have smelled it that day. That's what happens when people lose hope. All they've got left is despair. Observation number four. David arrives on the scene with hope. Don't you love this guy? I love this critter. I really do. He knew, he was not stupid. He knew that God, that Goliath was bigger than he was. Folks, this is not a stupid kid. Goliath was 9 feet, 9 inches tall. I don't know how old David was. He was a pretty young boy. I don't know how tall he was, but he was not stupid. He believed, in a sense, the same thing the army of God did. When he looked at this guy, he was not deluded. This guy is bigger than me. Well, duh. But the other thing David knew is that he knew that he was smaller than God. Verse 26, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should deny the armies of the living God? If you don't know what the word uncircumcised means, ask your youth pastor. I've got a little book with me when I do camps. It's called When Campers Ask. I give it out. Don't you love this guy? He just, the vernacular translation of that, and I want to be careful and reverent with the scriptures, the bottom line is David looks at this 9-foot-9-inch giant and basically says, who do you think you are? Which leads me to ask this big crucial question. Why did David view Goliath differently than the army of God did? That's not what the army of God was saying. That's what a little boy was saying. That leads me to ask a real important question. Why did he see things differently? What different pair of glasses did David have that he looked at life through than the army of God, adult men, leaders of Israel? How did David know in his bones that God was greater than Goliath when it seems like that the army of God forgot that? Well, let me answer that question because it's right in the text. David knew because, well, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself. The reason David looked at things differently, and this is important. Oh, this is fresh. David gazed at God and glanced at Goliath. The army of God gazed at Goliath and glanced at God. That's huge. I want to ask you a question. Where's your gaze? And where's your glance? If you don't believe David was a gazer, just flip over to the right, Psalm 27, just for a minute. Psalm 27. Now, this is the adult David writing. Psalm 27, listen to the adult David writing. And he says, Psalm 27, verse 4, one thing I ask of the Lord, that I might be wealthy and healthy. No. One thing I ask of the Lord is that our church might get huge and we might be known all over the world. No. One thing I ask of the Lord, this is what I seek, David says, that I might dwell in the house of the Lord all the days of my life, to gaze upon the beauty of the Lord and to seek Him in His temple. David was a gazer. Humorously, I was thinking, did you ever go to those movies where you had to have the 3D glasses? I never have been there, but because I have friends who go to movies, I don't really go myself. They tell me about them. But I never have been to a 3D movie, but you put the glasses on, I think I get the picture. You know, you see the 3D. Well, David didn't have 3D glasses. He had 3G glasses. He looked through the greatness of God, the glory of God, the goodness of God. He had 3G glasses. He looked at life differently than a whole nation did. Well, the question is, why? Why did he look at life differently? Because he had a personal history of the greatness of God. And by that I mean, there were times he had seen God flex His muscles before. It started with a lion, and then a bear, and then a giant. God doesn't always start us with giants. Aren't you glad? There's a principle of progression. You don't ask your three-year-old to bench press 350 pounds. And if you do, you're not a very compassionate parent. There's a principle of progression in the Christian life. Thank God He lets us watch Him flex His muscles against lions and bears before giants. And you know what David just knew? Well, God took down this lion. God took down this bear. And I got a word for you, Mr. Uncircumcised Philistine. You're going to be just like one of those. And I need to announce to you, you're going down too. And that just wasn't religious gobbledygook, folks. He knew it in his bones. Because he had tasted the greatness of God. Observation. Well, this is good. The greatness of God produces great hope. And great hope inspires great courage. And great courage enables us to take great risks. If you don't have a lot of hope, it's because you've probably got a shriveled vision of the greatness of God. If you don't have a lot of courage, it's probably because you don't have a lot of great hope. If you're unwilling to take risk, it all goes back to the greatness of God. Observation number four, there's always resistance. Here's the bad news. There's always resistance to a person of hope. You ever been smelling the smell of despair and someone with hope walked right into your despair? That's not always a welcome thing. A lot of times it is. Sometimes it isn't. Because we're just all just enmeshed in despair and we don't want anybody walking in with hope. Well, David walks in and he's just a little kid, naive, but he's filled with the greatness of God and consequently he's filled with hope. And he gets smacked right in the face, first of all, by his brothers. Why have you left those few sheep? Those few sheep in the wilderness? Why have you left your insignificant task to come here? I know your heart. You're conceited. You're proud. Of course, David's got that wonderful junior high answer. What? What? He got resistance from his family. Listen to me. You know, for some of you, you get incredible resistance from your family. But when God starts stirring up hope, you go home and that's all it takes. Boy, you just bump into their despair and their negativism and their cynicism. They don't like you coming home hopeful. They're married to their despair. Well, not only did Was he resisted by his family? He was resisted by the king. Hey, I got a word for you, David. Appreciate your heart, but this guy's been a warrior from his youth. You're just a kid. And the subliminal message is, sit down, shut up. You can't make a difference in this situation. Now, I know Samuel was the primary spiritual leader at this time, but I'll tell you what, Saul was a spiritual leader too. God raised up Saul when he was little in his own eyes. And God forbid that a lot of people's hope is quenched by spiritual leaders. Aren't you glad you don't have a group like that here? You real grateful for your spiritual leadership here? I hope you are. And I'm not paid to get to say this, but I'll tell you what. Let me say it from my toes. I hope you're grateful. Because if you're not grateful for the leaders God gives you, He might just move them on somewhere else. I've met a lot of churches that treat their leadership so trashy. And then God says, fine, I'll give you what you want. I'll tell you, if God gives you good men and women to lead you, you can't take care of them too much. You can't pay them too much. I tell our elders all the time, I'd love to sin by overpaying our staff, and then they can figure out what they're going to do with it, instead of sin by underpaying them. Now, I don't know anything about this church, so I don't have an agenda here. I'm just telling you. Thank God you don't have leadership who resists you. They're wanting to release you for hope. I got a friend of mine that goes to a church where the spiritual leadership gets real intimidated because they're insecure. They've always got to be in the spotlight. They don't want anybody to get ahead of them spiritually because they're so insecure. And this new Christian came to this church, brand new Christian, and he came up to the pastor, and my friend overheard him say this to the pastor. He said, Pastor, he said, I'm a new Christian, and I've been reading the book of Acts for the last 2 weeks. And the pastor said, uh-huh. And he said, I just wanted to ask you a question. And the pastor said, okay. Already the pastor's feeling uncomfortable. And he said, what I wanted to ask you, here's a brand new babe. He said, I've been reading the book of Acts, and the one question I got is this. When do we start doing the stuff? And you know what the pastor's bottom line, after all the stuff was cleared and all the religious cliches was peeled back, here was the answer. We don't do the stuff, we just talk about the stuff. We don't do the works of Jesus, we just sit around and talk about them. He didn't say this, but my take on that was, Jesus is the great I was, He's not the great I am in our church. People of hope, don't be naive. You just get resisted by your family, sometimes by your spiritual leaders, and thirdly, by the enemy. I mean, obviously, the voice of Satan through Goliath said, hey, you're going down, and I'm going to just strip your flesh off and feed you to the birds. You start getting a vision of the greatness of God. If you think Satan's just going to sit back and say, oh, well, he's not. He's not. He's going to try to steal the seed of the vision of the greatness of God from you. And boy, David could have been so intimidated when Goliath came at him, he could have said, well, I'm out of here. Do you know, I do not remember, I've been a pastor for 15 years, and I've been an itinerant, whatever this thing is that I do, for 11 years. That's 26 years. And I do not remember one time in the last years that I've gone out to speak at a church or a camp or a retreat where I've not heard the voices say to me, nobody will listen, you're wasting your time, you're wasting your life, this is stupid. Your lifespan is limited. You're going to spend precious time away from your wife with a limited lifetime span. You need to be spending more time with your wife. All the voices. You're going to waste your time. You're going to waste your life. Yeah, you may be prepared, but the people listening aren't. Yeah, they might get a few Jesus bumps, but they'll be the same in 2 weeks. Hear all those voices. And I've gotten to where I just say to the enemy, well, let's see. I'm not trying to be smart aleck. I'm not trying to be a smart aleck. I have a healthy respect for the demonic realm. I get nervous around these people that start talking all this trashy stuff about Satan and the demons and how they're gonna. I get nervous for people like that. We're dealing with someone that's been around a long time, folks. They've done their homework, whether we do or not. They've done their homework. But I don't come to them in my name. And hopefully neither do you. There's resistance to people of hope. Put it down. Write it on a rock. Observation number 5. God proved that he was huge. He was bigger than the Goliaths through a little boy named David. Observation number 6. David's hope and courage inspired other people to join him. When the giant went down, and sure enough, God fulfilled his word, all of a sudden the army of God found new life. Because one little boy walked into the playing field with a vision of the greatness of God. Does that encourage you? You're going to hear me say over and over and over and over this week, I don't believe it takes as many as we've been thinking. I really don't. I really don't. When I go do meetings now, I don't care who shows up. I really don't. And I don't say that flippantly. If God will just give us a core of the remnant, I'm real okay just to fill this little section here. If out of that core, if out of that remnant, God raises up a few Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's, a few Daniels, and a few Davids, that's fine with me. Time well spent. Time well spent. I don't feel any pressure to put in my newsletters. Thousands have responded. I'd find far more joy of saying, I'm not sure, but I think in the whole summer, we had a few little Shadrach and Meshachs come up. In the long haul for the kingdom, that's probably more powerful. Well, let's do some applications. Application number 1. This is where we get personal. Now, we've done all the, yeah, bless God, brother, preach it. Now we're to the, oh me, time. Okay. And that's for me, too. This is what I believe. Here's a conviction. I believe the army of God is paralyzed today. We're intimidated into silence, a lot of us. We're overwhelmed sometimes, not all the time, with the darkness around us and in us. It's one thing to have Goliath around us. It's another thing to have Goliath in us. We don't move in the authority and the confidence that God wants us to move in. And folks, I'm talking out of deep humility moving in that. I get nervous when I smell pride along with that. That's an oxymoron, like heavy feathers. Authority and power come to people of humility. You smell someone that's proud, they ain't got authority. They got a lot of hot air, but they don't have authority. I don't know about you folks, but I'm just trying to be honest. I'm just trying to be authentic. It doesn't look like we're winning to me. Does it to you? When I walk down the streets of San, where are we? San Antonio. Start to say San Diego. I travel so much I have to call the front desk. And I honestly, I'm not kidding you, I ask the person when I get up early in the morning, where am I? She thinks I've been drinking. Lady, I hadn't been drinking. I don't know where I am. Help me! Folks, when I'm honest, and what I see, what's happening out there, it doesn't look like we're winning to me. Darkness seems to just be kicking our tail. Sometimes in me, too. As well as around me. I think it's an army of God today. And thank God, God's doing a new thing. I'm not discouraged. I am not discouraged. But I'm just talking about the church at large, folks. It's particularly in America. By and large, I think we're pretty impotent. We're pretty powerless. We don't move in authority. We move out of intimidation and fear. for a lot of us, we've just been intimidated into silence. And we have bought the line. David didn't buy it, but we bought the line from the enemy that says, sit down, shut up, you cannot make a difference. And we've kind of numbly said, okay, well, at least I'm going to heaven. Application number two, and this will be one of the most important things I say all week. So if you're going to miss something, don't miss this. I want you to understand the motive behind the miracle in this text, because it will always be the motive behind any miracle that you experience. There was a miracle in 1 Samuel 17. A giant went down through the sling of a boy. But here was the motive behind the miracle. It was what freed God up to move in power. This is so important, and I don't think we get this, and we need to get it. The motive behind a miracle from God is always that God's name would be hallowed. Notice what David said. I underlined it again. In 1 Samuel 17, verse 46, today I will give the carcasses of the Philistine army to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, that the whole world will someday read about me and what a great guy I was. Wrong. That the whole world will talk about our church and what a cool church it is. Wrong. That the whole world will know about my name and my ministry and my denomination. God could care less. I'm going to tell you what he cares about. He cares about his name. And I think so much of the restricted, miraculous movement of God is present because we care more about our name and our tag than God's name. Look at the text, that the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel and that this God saves, for the battle is the Lord's and he will give all of you into my hands. Folks, a Christian life is God-centered, not man-centered. That doesn't mean God doesn't love us and is wild about us and loves to do good stuff, but you make no mistake about it, far beyond his love and his concern for us is his concern for the glory of his name. That's why David could approach Goliath and he says, I come to you in a name. And it ain't my name. It's his name. So that when you go down, and you make no mistake about it, you are going down. And so when you go down, the key is not going to be about people reading about David and Goliath. Through the centuries, the key is going to be they're going to read about a name of a great God. And I tell you what, you get a body of believers that more than anything else, they care about the glory of his name. You better watch out. It's going to release God to pour out a river of life. Who care about his name. Now, what I just said, you need to chew on that thought. I have been chewing on for a year. For 1 year. And if you think you just got what I said, you didn't get it the way God wants you to get it. You need to chew on that and chew on that and chew on that. It's for the glory of his name. Isaiah 26, 8. For your name and your renown, your fame, is the desire. You get a remnant of people that really mean that from their bones. You better strap in. God's going to come blowing through that place like a freight train. I want to give you a book. I never do this, but I want to recommend a book. And I didn't even write it. Because I ain't deep enough to write this one. It's by a friend of mine, John Piper. Here's the title the pleasures of God. And the subtitle, listen to the subtitle! The subtitle of this book, The Pleasures of God, is this: God's pleasure in being God. Most of the stuff we write and read in our Christian bookstore is about man. And about how God wants to bless me. And I am the center of it all. It's me, it's me, it's me, it's not us, it's God. It's God, it's God, it's God. And David knew that. He knew that. And he said, for the glory of your name, take down this 9 feet, 9 inch piece of meat for the glory of your name. So that throughout centuries, when people think about this story, out of it they will say, oh God, you are great and your name is greatly to be praised. Application number three, we need a fresh vision of the greatness of God. I need a great vision, a new vision of the greatness of God. Because out of that vision of God's greatness, out of that revelation of God's greatness, will come great hope. Can I ask you a question? Are you a person of hope? When people get around your life, they smell stuff. And I'm not trying to be crude. I'm not talking about on the natural realm. On the spiritual, do you know they smell stuff about us? Is one of the things that people smell about you and me hope? That's part of the aroma of Christ. When we walk into our everyday, whether it's a mechanic, or whether it's pumping gas, or whether it's VP of a huge insurance company, when we walk into a room, people go... And that's not just about cologne, folks, perfume. That's about our personhood. You know what? If you're a person of despair, I want to appeal to you. Ask God for a vision of His greatness. So that in this next year, you know what? Honestly, with authenticity, you could become a person of hope. Because I want to tell you what, folks. Tonight when this is over and on Monday morning when you go out into San Antonio, there's a smell of despair out there, folks. There's a smell of despair. Application number four. God probably wants to start with a lion or a bear in your life before He would a Goliath. He wants to build your personal history of experiencing His greatness. He wants you and I to be gazers versus glancers. Well, this is where the bottom line, the rubber hits the road right now. I want to ask you some questions. As you ponder your life right now, you ready to do some work? All this has just been setting up for this. Here we are. Are you ready to do some work? Are you done? Are we done? Are you ready to do some work? Okay, here we go. Here we go. Here's some work right now. Get ready. Step up. As you ponder your life right now, what are some of your Goliaths? Well, I don't have any. Well, you're not thinking deep enough. What are some of your lions and bears? Let me ask it a different way. What in your life feels bigger than God? What causes you right now as you sit in your pew or your chair, what causes you to lose hope? Let me ask it a different way. What relentlessly assaults you? What's the primary voice of despair that comes at you that you hear? Where do you smell despair when you look at your life? Well, nowhere, David. I'm just praising the Lord. I don't believe you. Maybe it's a personal Goliath. Maybe it's a sin you can't control. You ever had a sin that you can't control? a different way of asking that question. Have you got anything in your life where you've lost your no? You say, I'm never going to do that again. And you wake up and you've done it. That's called an addiction. You've lost your no. I'm feeling real down, and I'm not going to go to the mall to feel better and alter my mood by buying something. And about an hour later, you've already bought it. I'm going to alter my mood, so I'm going to do something sexual to feel better. Okay, I'm not going to do it, and I do it. That's called a sexual addiction. Let's just say it out loud. Sin for sure. But we lose our no. And when you lose your no, that's a besetting sin. Maybe it's a sin you can't control. Maybe it's a wound that won't heal. You've had it in your life forever. And it just oozes infection. It's a wound that just won't heal. And man, it just rises up and just indicts you all the time. It talks to you. It says, I'm going to be here until you breathe your last breath. It ain't never going to be healed. You were raped as a child, and it'll be here till the day you die. You were abused as a child, and you'll never get over it. Well, I'm not minimizing that type of violation, but either God's bigger than that Goliath or he isn't. Let's make up our minds. Either he's bigger than our sexual addiction or he isn't. And if he isn't, let's go on a hunt for a new God. I'm all for it. Maybe it's guilt that won't budge. You just dragging that guilt around. Man, you've talked and you've thought about it. It just won't budge. It's just there every day. It indicts you every day. Look what you did when you were 14. Look what you did when you were 19. Look what you did last night! It won't budge. It's a lion, it's a bear, it's a Goliath. Maybe it's self-hatred. You look at the mirror and you say, you're such an absolute failure. I hate you. You know, I meet very, very few Christians who feel good about themselves. And all this talk about God loving me is just a bunch of religious cliche. Because when you peel it all back, we just hate ourselves because we're such miserable failures. And the bottom line is, we feel that way about us because we believe our own press. We are miserable failures. Hello? My question is, what does that have to do with anything? But I guess it bases on who you listen to for your self-image. And if you got to improve before you like yourself, well, strap in for the long haul. And I ain't real optimistic. You need to start listening to a different voice. And that voice says, yeah, you are a mess. And you're going to probably be a mess until the day I come and pick you up. But I love you, Mr. Mess. I love you, Miss Mess. So why don't you just relax? Quit wrestling and start nestling. To quote my friend Corey Ten Boom. My friend, I ain't never met the woman. I'm just saying that. Maybe your Goliath is you're just disillusioned. You came to this revival almost dreading it because you thought, oh, he's going to ask me to try to commit myself again. And I failed and it hadn't lasted. And I'm just not going to commit myself again because I just was a miserable failure the last time. And that disillusionment just drenches you like rain. Well, folks, I ain't going to ask you to recommit because I ain't impressed with your committer. Folks, if you're your only hope, you're in deep weeds. I have no hope for you. I tell you, for years when I was a legalist, and I'm still a recovering legalist, my big challenge everywhere I went, and I do, because I am a forceful speaker, that's about a gift, that's not about arrogance. I mean, people would pretty much do whatever I said to do. And the problem was, I was speaking error and didn't even know it. I've had people come up to me and say, well, I disagree with what you said on the tape. And I say, well, you know what? I listened to my tapes 10 years ago and I disagree with what I said on the tape. So just stand in line and take a number. Knowing the truth is an evolving process. God keeps pruning out stuff I say that's wrong. But I used to go, and the message I would give is commitment. Be committed. Commitment's important, but folks, the only reason you and I are able to be committed is because He's committed to us. See, that's the good news of the gospel. The good news of the gospel is not that I'm committed to Him. The good news of the gospel is that He is committed to me. The good news of the gospel is not that I'm at peace with God, even though I might be. The good news of the gospel is that He is at peace with me. The good news of the gospel is not that I am for God. The good news of the gospel is that He is for me. That's good news. I'm for Him too, but so what? The big issue is He's for me. Maybe your Goliath is a problem in your family, a marriage that just seems dead or hopeless. I love to hear people talk about their marriages. My wife and I, we just have the most incredible marriage. Marriage, marriage, marriage. It probably ain't as good as you just said. My wife and I have an intimate marriage, but man, we got tons of work to do. We need help. Because you know what? I'm not really interested in a good marriage. I want an intimate one. And that's a piece of work. That's a miracle. Because I can be so proud and stubborn and want my own way and self-righteous. I'm a piece of work to live with. And you are too. Sometimes intimacy in marriage feels like a Goliath. And you start smelling despair. And then that's when we start really getting stupid and we start looking around thinking, well, maybe if I was with someone else, it would be better. Wrong! Just plan on doubling your trouble. Man, every now and then, I'm 46 and I'm doing midlife. And every now and then, the thought crosses my mind when I see a cute little 25-year-old blonde and don't look at me like, I can't believe you're saying that. And that lasts about a nanosecond, and I go, I think we're digressing here, folks. We're about to close. You got any personal Goliaths? Maybe you got some ministry Goliaths. There's all kinds of Goliaths. Do you know, for some of you, maybe 1997, 98 is you need to really be serious about pursuing a ministry. Do you know, your vocation is different than your calling. Get a job to pay the bills, but that's not God's call on your life, for goodness sakes. Pump gas to pay your bills, but your call is to be a servant of the Lord Jesus Christ. Do whatever you got to do to pay your bills. But don't let that be your calling. Your calling is to be a servant of Jesus Christ. And for some of you, you're really timid of just saying, I'm not adequate to have a ministry. Well, bingo. Hello. You think I feel adequate to do this? Then you don't know me. It's not about your adequacy. It's about saying, God, I'm tired of sitting in the pew. I want to get out of the bleachers of being a spectator. I want to get on the playing field. I don't want to live my life vicariously through David Walker or David Guyon or Billy Hobbs. I want to be a pastor. I want to be a shepherd. I want to be a servant. And maybe that starts out by passing offering plates, which is a noble, honorable thing. And maybe it's picking up church bulletins. You know what Michael Singletary today is doing at Willow Creek? He's emptying trash cans. He was the starting linebacker for the Chicago Bears forever. And now he's retired. And he empties trash cans around Willow Creek. You know why? Because he believes in the mission of the church. And yet some of us, if we're not careful, we can be parasites in the body. And we take, and we take, and we take. I'm going to be talking about that Wednesday night. Doesn't that sound like you want to be a part of that? Living in community, experiencing the family of God. Come out of the bleachers, some of you this year. Come out of the bleachers. Get down on the field. Well, I can get hurt down there. Absolutely. You betcha. Oh, absolutely. You'll sweat and you'll bleed and you'll cry and you'll die and you'll moan. But there's something about the exhilaration of being a participant. You know, after football games, I love to watch the camera just circle the crowd and then the players in the field. And every now and then they'll circle the crowd and I'll see this guy that's 300 pounds overweight and he's got peanut juice coming out of his side. His mouth, and he's saying, "We won! We won!" And then, and then the camera angle will change, and it'll go down in the locker room, and he'll be interviewing the players. And boy, I see blood and sweat and grime and exhaustion and fatigue and sometimes defeat and sometimes victory. And I'll tell you, when they say those two words, "We won," it's different than the spectator in the bleacher. Some of you need to get on the playing field this year. You've been a taker long enough. And for me to say that, you feel like a Goliath sitting right in the middle of your lap.